But anyway, so this is the last talk of this retreat. But there'll always be another retreat coming soon. So don't think, oh, this is it. I've meditated and I haven't got anything. Oh, what am I going to do and tell my friends when I go back home? They ask you, you were with Ajahn Brahm in a wonderful Jhana Grove retreat center. What did you get? Nothing. Lose it. Okay. You've been reading my book. If you are peaceful and you've lost all of your desires and cravings, then you are a loser. And if you become enlightened, you are the biggest loser. So I know that some people, you know, are overweight. But not me. My mind is very light. Forget about overweight in your body. Are you overweight in your mind? When you go home, when they do the check-in package, are you going to have to pay a fine because you're overweight? When you check into your next life, you may be overweight in your head for too much baggage from the past. So here, let everything go. I'm not talking about the baggage you're going to really check in. I'm talking the baggage between your ears. All the memories, the fears, the hopes, all of that is just extra baggage. So remember, just like on these cut price airlines, on Air Buddha, you're not allowed to check in anything. Not in the hold, nor in the cabin. I know that some cut price airlines, they allow one piece of baggage. On Air Buddha, no baggage at all. You just go in with what you have, your clothes, the present moment, and that's it. So this is, it's true, being a loser means having less and less emotional possessions. That's why that somebody asked me as I was signing the book, remember that sentence I said when I was giving them an interview, something about perception. So, no, of course not. I was trained by Ajahn Chah. He said whenever you're doing interviews or counselling, you should be dustbin. And that's what I am, I'm a dustbin. So what goes in, goes straight down the bottom, because it's a dustbin with a hole in the bottom. You receive everybody's questions, complaints. You receive everything, but once you've received it, it goes straight through. So you keep nothing. And if you are an empty dustbin, with a hole in the bottom. So if you're a dustbin with a hole in the bottom, you can receive everything of life. The happiness, the pain, the difficulties, the joy. You can receive everything in your dustbin called your body and mind. And it goes right through. And you keep nothing, so you can be empty for the next person who comes. So on this retreat, take nothing back with you. Leave it all here. We have the big skip outside. So all your suitcases. No, forget your suitcases. Those two shopping bags, the past and the future, throw them in the skip. Isn't that wonderful? You're totally free from the past. Totally free of fear of the future. The present moment as much as you can. So especially all those bad memories. I hope all of you did that little psychology process of the toilet paper one and writing on... I told you that, didn't I? Yeah. On brown ink, all the terrible things which has happened to you in your life. All the bad things which your partner has said and done. All the rotten things you've done. All the times you've been cheated in business. All the terrible times and all the terrible jokes that Ajahn Brahm has inflicted on you. Write them on that toilet paper. And then read it and put it in the toilet and flush it. Let it go. And if you can let things go, you're so peaceful in life. So happy, because then you are free to enjoy the present moment. And you're also free to adapt. You never know what's going to happen next. Many of you think the retreat's ending. Good. That's what happened with Ajahn Chah. He always taught us not to expect a thing. He didn't know what was going to happen next. Even sometimes he'd start giving a talk and he wouldn't finish till tomorrow morning. So, settle in. But you can see just how frustrated and angry you get when life does not go according to your plans. And you've had so much anger in the past when people have let you down because you planned, and it hasn't worked out. You find you won't have half as much anger if you learn to adapt. Yes, to have plans, but to have plans which are so rubbery, you can actually bend them around and go in totally the opposite direction. You can adapt. You know, some of the teachings I give here, I'm a Buddhist monk. I'm amazed that you give them here, and a few weeks later, they end up on things like Harvard Business School blog. So someone's listening to these things, and you know, if it's Harvard Business School blog, at least I should get commission. And they were saying, look, if business, successful business in today's world, should be able to turn on a dime, to be able to adapt to these changing economic circumstances, which change abruptly. If you have your fixed business plan and you can't change, you can't adapt, that means you're going to be in big trouble. It's the same in life. Always be very, very adaptable to change at a moment's notice. So you go to the airport and find your flight's been cancelled. Okay, there's always another flight. And maybe good news, you can come back to Johannesburg. So whatever your plans are, never make them permanent and stiff. Instead, make peace, be kind, be gentle all the time. It's not really planning life, it's planning how you're going to respond and react to life. And if you can do things like that, you will always have a happy, peaceful life. It's not only many of you are going back, some of our monks are leaving to go to other countries. They spent 3 months rains retreat here. Some of the Anagarikas and the visitors are going off all over the place. And one of them asked me last night as we were driving in, have you got some advice? You know, what should I do when I go back to the world after spending 3 or 4 months in a monastery? Now, how can I meditate when I've got all these jobs and things to do? And that's a question which each one of you would like to know the answer to, and it's a very, very simple answer. It was the story of when this Australian man, he was from Sydney, he came to visit me many years ago here in Perth and told me a story, one of Ajahn Chah's stories, which not many people know. Because he went to visit Ajahn Chah in Thailand, he realized that this was a very advanced monk and wanted to see him personally. And it was hard to get to Wat Pa Kong because it's out in the countryside in one of the remote provinces, you know, in Ubon, Ratchathani province. It's a long way away. And so getting to Bangkok and then getting a train up to Warin Chamrap and then finding a taxi to take him to Ajahn Chah was a big expedition. And when he finally got there, he was lucky that Ajahn Chah was in that day. But when he came to see Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Chah was surrounded by hundreds of people. And so he couldn't ask his question. Now this was a person who came so far for one reason, and one reason only, to see Ajahn Chah. And he sat on the outside of the group, and he realized that he's no way that he's ever going to find a turn to ask his question. He gave up. You know what it's like sometimes? You're lining up to get the book signed, you see so many books, I'm not going to get this signed. And so he gave up. And so he walked away from the Ajahn Chah's hut. And then he realized he had another 40 minutes or an hour before his taxi was going to come to take him back to the train station for catch a train back to Bangkok. And he saw other monks were just sweeping. You know what it's like sometimes here? You see somebody sweeping the bugs off the path. And so you pick up a broom as well and sweep as, to help out. That's what he was doing. He just decided to do some good service while he had 30 or 40 minutes to kill. And as he was sweeping, he felt a hand on his shoulder. And he turned around and found out that hand belonged to Ajahn Chah. Now, these monks are very, very kind and compassionate. Even though this man had not had a chance to ask a question, Ajahn Chah, he was going off to another appointment, and on his way to the car, stopped to see this Westerner to give him some advice. And of course, you don't have time to speak in detail. All he said to this Westerner, if you're going to sweep, give it 100% everything you've got. And Ajahn Chah went away. And because that came from a great master, that Australian man remembered that instruction and realized it wasn't just about sweeping. It was about everything else in his life. So for those of you who work in the BF, when you're working, give it everything you've got. When you're eating, give it everything you've got. When you're playing, everything. When you're resting, give rest everything you've got. So don't go thinking about the work tomorrow or about what happened earlier today. Give resting everything you've got. And when you're meditating, give meditating everything you've got. And when you give everything you've got into every moment, number one, you're being in the present moment. Number two, you're putting effort into this present moment. And the strange thing is, you don't get so tired. I always thought before I heard that, if I give too much to this talk this morning, I won't have anything left for the talk this afternoon. But it doesn't work that way. If you give a lot of energy into the work in the moment, you're actually building up this store of energy. You're not using it, you're building it up. And so later on you have even more energy. So when you have your lunch, you can really enjoy it. When you rest, you can really rest deeply. When you play, you can play with lots of energy. Because whatever you do, you give it energy. And that becomes your nature. But if you only work half-heartedly, then you'll find you'll only meditate half-heartedly. And when you meditate half-heartedly, you won't be able to sleep properly because your mind's all over the place. It's never focused on one thing. So that piece of advice, this Australian said, made him get rid of all his stress and anxiety, made him a very successful man, and also made him a good meditator. It was win-win-win all over the place. And that was wonderful advice for life, for you. When you're in meditation retreat, give meditation everything you've got. When you're on the aircraft, watching the movies, give everything you've got to the movie. When you're back home at work, give everything you've got to your work. When you're doing charity work, everything you've got to charity work. When you're giving a donation for the Katina, everything you've got in your bank account. Do everything you've got, said Ajahn Chah. Now that's what not really meant, we can't. But with your energy, that means you really give a lot of energy and effort. And you know, that's how I've been practicing for years and years and years. And that's why sometimes some of the monks can't understand, just how do you do that? You know, just the amount of stuff which I've done in the last week. Not just for you, I've been doing about two or three jobs. No, this is only a third of the jobs I've been doing the last week, this retreat. But you've got so much energy, where the heck does it come from? Because you give everything you've got to whatever's happening. Even signing the books. Everything you've got to make it nice signatures. And other people say, come on, just thumbprint. Just stamp, chop. No, come on. You've got to give everything you've got. And then it's much more fun for me and much more fun for you too. So what you've learned on this retreat is not just how to be still, but how to give everything you've got to whatever's happening. How to be... What I've been really impressed with here is how many of you have broken the rules. I've been impressed with that because you've done it out of kindness. Helping each other, making some food, chat, chat, chat. But you've done it with a smile, with kindness, which is really important. And I've been on some of these. They're very strict retreats, some of these retreats. No one smiles at each other at all. And if you do smile, they tell you off. They scold you. No smiling. This is serious retreat. Have you been on those retreats? You know, no one gets much there. And that's why people sometimes ask me, say, look, my husband, he went on one of these retreats. And when he came back, it was worse than before. What's going on? Because there was not enough metta there. It was too much trying to achieve things, too much control. And when you try and achieve things, have too much control, too many plans, you find that makes you stressed and gets you frustrated and angry. Here you've learned something else. How to make peace and be kind, be gentle, no matter what's happening. And I was very happy that whoever it was, well done, thank you so much for the person who used to snore every morning. Because that was done on purpose, to teach all the people who are meditating in the morning how to be kind and how to let go and how to not bother about the snoring. The person was happy, and that made me happy. There was one time in our center in Nolamara. I love telling this story because it shows what really Buddhism should be. And during the meditation, this lady, she lay down with her feet pointing to the Buddha, fell asleep and started snoring during the meditation, really loudly. And one of the people next to her woke her up. And I really scolded that person for waking this woman up. Because I told them afterwards that that woman, she was a victim of domestic abuse at home. Her husband was beating her. And she was so afraid at home, she could hardly sleep. She didn't sleep at home. She was stressed out, afraid, really tired, much more than you were when you first came here. And when she came to our center, she felt safe. The only place in Perth, she felt protected. So the first thing her body told her to do was to lay down, and she fell fast asleep. Well done. She needed it. It was a safe place, a comfortable place, where the metta of everybody around her said, you can do this. Only one stupid disciple woke her up. Never do that. If someone is asleep, they need it. Well done. So let them. And when you hear them snoring, you feel so much mudita. Oh, it's so wonderful that someone's happy and having a rest. It gives you so much joy when you see that happening. So you don't have a fault-finding mind. You have this beautiful mind which accepts that people go through all sorts of different stuff on a retreat or in life, and your job is to be kind to them. Somebody sent me a story. It's actually from the United States. They'd just been to the shopping mall, and they just come back, and they're carrying these bags in their hands as they just open the door of their house. And as they open the door of the house, this dog ran straight past her into her house, went into a quiet corner of the room, laid down and went to sleep. It wasn't her dog. It was somebody else's dog. Oh no, she couldn't stop the dog. And of course she put the shopping down. I went to see, and there's this dog who was fast asleep, you know, just, it's such a nice dog. I like dogs. It's one of these golden Labradors. I like dogs and cats. You see a nice little dog like that. It was clean. It wasn't stray. It had a collar on. So it was obviously, you know, somebody's pet. And there it was, just quietly sort of going to sleep in the corner of her house. So being a kind woman, she said, oh, you can sleep there if you want. But she didn't know where the dog was from. And the dog slept there for about 2 or 3 hours. And then the dog got up, you know, barked a little bit just to get her attention so she could let it out. And the dog went. And the same thing happened the next day. The dog was waiting, and as soon as she opened the door, went inside, went in the same corner, curled up, you know, like dogs do, and went fast asleep again. And after 3 or 4 days, the same thing happening, 3 or 4 days in a row, and then she wondered, where's this dog come from? It was a really nice dog. You know, it wasn't sort of aggressive, it just wanted a quiet place to sleep. So what she did, she wrote a little note on a piece of paper, you know, saying, now, I don't know where this dog is from, but it's a very lovely dog. And it's most welcome to come to my house for a sleep. But I'm just curious, you know, who owns it and why is it doing this? And she wrote that note and tucked it under the dog's collar. And so when the dog woke up, she let it out again, the dog wagged its tail, and off the dog went to who knows where. And the next day when the dog came back, there was a different note under the collar. It was a reply. And so she opened the reply and said, "This dog lives in a house with a nagging wife, 5 children, 2 who are under 5 years of age. It's coming to your house to get some peace and quiet." And the underneath was said, "Can I come too?" Because that's what it's like in modern life. Even dogs don't get peace and quiet. And they want to come and find a place. So when that happens, you just let people come in and let them sleep and have a bit of a rest. Because that's the problems of modern life. So I understand that. You understand the importance of compassion and kindness. So that's, now I haven't really taught that except by making peace, being kind, being gentle. Maybe you've taught that by your attitude. I always remember being a school teacher, teaching maths and science. I was told it's not just maths and science you teach the children in your class. You also give them the lesson on who you are and how you react and how you behave. So there's many, many different levels of education, you know, when you're giving a class. And I haven't just been teaching meditation when I've been here. I've been teaching kindness, you know, paying attention and caring for you. And that's probably the lesson which is one of the most important. And that's why I say I'm very happy that you've been kind and caring for one another to really see this. Because if you don't look after one another, you might end up like the animals in the following stories. A few new stories which I've been gathering, which you have not heard before. There are very few. And that's the story of how a mouse trap killed a chicken, a pig, and a cow. How can a mousetrap kill a chicken, or a pig, or even a big cow? And I will now tell you how. In a farm, a remote farm, there were 5 mice living in a house, and they made friends with the chicken, with the pig, and with the cow. All of them were just really close friends. They used to hang out together and enjoy each other's company. And especially the mice, because they lived in the house, they would listen to what the farmer or the farmer's wife was doing. And if they heard that the farmer wanted chicken, roast chicken for lunch, they would warn the chicken, "Hide, lay low, they'll be looking for you, they want some chicken today." If they heard the farmer's wife wanted pork sausages, they'd tell the pig, "Go and hide, hide, hide." If they wanted steak, "Cow, now go into the bush, disappear." And that way, the mice looked after the chicken, the pig, and the cow. That's why they called, because it was 5 mice, they called it MI5. Mouse Intelligence 5. One day, one of the mice was just hanging around the house during the daytime, you know, looking through the cracks in the wall. And he saw the farmer's wife get a package from the post and open it. And when she opened the package, oh, that mouse almost died of a heart attack. He started shaking in fear because what the farmer's wife opened up, what was inside the package, was a mouse trap. "Oh my goodness," said the mouse. "She's trying to kill us. We're dead, we're toast, we've had it." And he was so upset and afraid, he told his friends, the other mice, "What are we going to do? The farmer's wife has got a mouse trap. Look, we run around in the dark, that's when we go out and find food. How can we know whether the mouse trap has been set? It's only a matter of time. We're going to die. Oh no." And they decided, let's go and ask their friends. So they went to Mrs. Chicken and said, "Mrs. Chicken, something terrible has happened. There's a mouse trap in the house." You know what the chicken said? "Nothing to do with me. Mouse traps can't kill chickens. Look after yourselves." That's not a very good friend, is it? So they went to Mrs. Pig. Mrs. Pig said, oink oink, nah, nothing to do with me either. I've never heard a mousetrap kill a pig, so it's not my problem. Look after yourselves. And so next they went to their third friend, Mrs. Cow. Mrs. Cow, please help us, no one else will. There's a mousetrap in the house. Oh, we're terrified. He's going to kill us sooner or later. And the cow just said, moo. Not my problem. Look after yourselves. And those poor mice had looked after their friends. When they needed help, their friends let them down. Sure enough, the next night, one of the mice was scampering in the floor. Whack! And a mouse trap caught its neck. And the poor mouse died and went to mice heaven. And when the other mice heard that sound, they came out to see, and they saw their friend in the mouse trap, dead. And they all started crying. And they're putting their little hands around each other to console. Oh, we've lost our friend. Have you lost a good friend or a loved one? It's the same for mice too, you know. They have mouse grief. And then the farmer's wife, she also heard the sound. She came to investigate. And what did she see? Four mice crying. And she was so shocked to see four mice crying that she fainted. And it was such a great shock to her system that she became sick. Bedridden. And the farmer, it was a long way from any doctor. So the farmer thought, what am I going to do? My wife is sick. And he thought, ah, yes, chicken soup. That's supposed to be good if you're sick. So because the mice were all grieving, they didn't have time to tell Mrs. Chicken what the farmer wanted. Before they could say, Mrs. Chicken had her head chopped off and was put in a pot with some garlic and salt. And that became chicken soup. That's how the mouse trap killed the first animal, the chicken. And as she was getting more and more sick, the chicken soup wasn't working. They had to invite, all her friends came to visit, like you do. If you hear your friend is sick, you go and visit, see how they are. And so the farmer had to look after the guests. He said, gee, I've got all these guests coming, what should I feed them? Sausages. So they caught the pig, slaughtered a pig and made sausages for the guests visiting the wife. And that is how the mousetrap killed the pig. Unfortunately, the farmer's wife died of shock. And they had to have a big funeral for the farmer's wife. And as you all know, even in Singapore, after the funeral, you have to entertain the mourners. Roast beef. So the farmer had to kill the cow to feed the guests who came to his wife's funeral. And that's how the mousetrap killed the cow. So the moral of that story is, just because it's a mousetrap, don't think it's not going to affect me. Just because one of your friends or family or members of the BF are in trouble, say, oh, it's your business, you look after yourself, it won't affect me. It does. Who had ever thought a mousetrap could kill a cow? But it did. Who would ever think that somebody else's difficulty or problems would affect you? But they do. So if anyone on this retreat is having a problem or difficulty, don't say, that's your problem, look after yourself. No, it is our problem. If only the chicken, the pig or the cow had helped their friends. All the cow needed to do is step on the mousetrap, could break it. Then they would all be alive. So remember what compassion is. Looking after each other, even when you think, it's not my problem. So that's the story. Have I told that one before, BF? A new one! Yeah! Very good. So So that's why we have compassion and kindness to look after one another. That's why I'm very happy that you've been looking after one another and caring. Not just my meditation. And I want to be quiet and don't make any noise. And you don't be sick. And anyone has a cough or the flu, out of here. You're spreading diseases. You know, we should have, like I saw at Singapore Airport, at Changi Airport, you know, the heat detectors to see if anyone has fever. We should have that at the reception area. So anyone who comes into this retreat center with a high temperature, send them out again. Out, 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 out. So we have to make sure that everybody is healthy in this place. Of course, that's not right, is it? Also, we have to have customs when you come into the retreat center. I have to check your suitcases for biscuits or for cup noodles. Make sure there's no contraband. Would that be a nice retreat? No, it would be terrible if you do things like that. That's being control freak. Instead, it's much better to trust each other. That's the opposite of control. Trust. So I trust each one of you. It's up to you to do whatever you need to do. Sometimes some of you have difficulty with you know, the meals in the morning, lunchtime. So if you sneak something in, I know what you're doing. And I let you do it out of kindness. But that's what you need to do. It's called trust. And that ability to trust other people is essential to any community. And the trust understands that sometimes they will let you down. That's part of trust. But nevertheless, even though they let you down, you still continue to trust them. That's par for the deal, par for the course. Because if you don't trust anybody in life, where can it be any relationship, any happiness, any peace? So you know, I trust Singapore Airlines when they carry me all over the world, and that's because you've got some good trainers of the pilots. you have to trust people. And you have to trust your monks, that we know what we're talking about with meditation, and you trust it. It does work. And when you trust people that way, life becomes so much more easy. I remember one of the Buddhists in England who was an advisor to the Bank of England. Remember when he came to, I think, Singapore to give a presentation at one, I think it was maybe in the first global conference on Buddhism. And it was Colin Ash, he was a professor at, I think, Reading University, economics. And he said at the last moment, the night before, he changed his presentation on the Buddhist contribution to economic prosperity. He said, one of the things I remember from his presentation was one of the biggest drains of any business is called transaction costs. And that is the money which you have to allow for when your suppliers don't deliver the goods on time. Or when they don't pay on time. They all say, yeah, you're going to pay on time, but it's always a few days late. They always say, you know, the goods are going to arrive on Monday. Just like we were supposed to have some desks delivered on Friday, and they didn't put them on the truck. So, that's transaction costs. You can't trust people to deliver on time. But they say, when you do have trust, and people live up to that trust, you cut a lot of expenses from your business. He said, the thing with Buddhism, people learn to trust each other, and they live up to that trust. If you give trust to another person, you're giving a gift, and the other person often values that gift so much, they don't want to destroy it. You try even harder to live up to that trust. If you really do trust your suppliers and your creditors, if they really are good Buddhists, they will live up to that trust. It happens so often because, you know, you see we build these monasteries here, and you know that I do a lot of the building myself, if not actually laying the bricks, organizing things. And all the suppliers and builders, they trust this place so much. So much that once I was going to the hardware store to get some, they call it Laminex, this covered surface for kitchen tops. And the people who were running the hardware shop They gave me the brochure. It was one of these big brochures, and I couldn't find a place to open it up and have a look at it, because there's lots of people in the shop. So I was just moving around, and I just didn't really realise what I was doing. I actually put this brochure on top of the till, you know, the cash box. And it was one of these electronic ones. It was so sensitive, as soon as I put it down, you know, the drawer came out. With all the day's takings. It was thousands of dollars in this box. And of course, you know, when the drawer comes out, it makes a ding. And when he heard that ding, all the other builders, you know, in the shop stopped. Everyone was silent. They looked at me. And one of the builders said, "You better look out for that monk. You know, he's got the cash box." And the owner of the shop, Roy, he said, "Oh, that's just a monk. He can't even touch the stuff." And he just walked away. With total trust, I could have emptied the whole box and escaped. You know, thousands of dollars. But because he trusted me, I just... Now, he'll close it when he's ready. And I really value that trust. It's so beautiful. If you can leave money somewhere and you know that no one's going to steal it, leave the doors open, no one's going to come in. That's my door of my cave is always open. So please don't go in when I'm there. Any other time, fine. So that, it's nice when we have trust in our life, when we trust one another, when we trust, you know, the fact that we can have a few people we can really, really, really trust. And most importantly, trust yourself. You know that you've seen Rob and Chris who've come here while you've been here, prisoners from the local jail. They just come here and they just walk around and says, you know, all your valuables are in your hut, there's donations in the box, you know, some people's cars are out there. And these are convicted felons. Are you afraid? They're really nice guys. So you trust them and they live up to your trust. It's wonderful when you have those things happen. So a lot of times, sometimes when you go into a jail, you look at someone, you find something in there you can trust, and then that's what they show you back. If, from the very beginning, I was saying to you, during this retreat, there's going to be a couple of felons walking around Jhana Grove, you said, "I'm not coming, not me, no." Because you have this idea what people are. But when you trust people, that's what they show you back. People usually live up to your trust. So that's why you trust yourself as well. Trust yourself that when you're meditating, yeah, you're doing your very best. It may not live up to what you expect. You're doing your best. What more can you do? So trust yourself. Trust the process, which means you don't control so much. You can let go. And trust the future. You know, you've been alive long enough, each one of you. Yeah, sometimes there's problems and difficulties, things you don't expect in the future. But that gives the interest of the future. As I said, 70% rule. If everything was happy, perfect all the time, you would not learn anything at all. When it's difficulties or problems, we call that growing pain. That's where you learn. The hardest of the school teachers I knew, you know, the ones who had the cane. You know, you hated them, but you learned a lot from them. You learn not to get caught next time. But no, sometimes the hardest lessons in life, they're the ones you learn the most from. So you trust yourself. You trust, you know, that whatever pain or difficulty you're in, it will pass. It always has. It always will. What Ajahn Chah always used to teach me, whenever I was really sick, "Don't worry, Ajahn Brahm. You'll either get better or you'll die. It will pass." So you trust in the whole process, which means you can let go and relax in life. And the greatest act of trust is to trust in this present moment. As long as you're making peace, being kind, being gentle, you're doing the very, very best you can do at all situations in life. When you're at work, just make peace, be kind, be gentle. You get more work done when you're not stressed. You have much happier friendships in the office. when you're not trying to control everybody. You have much greater health when your body is relaxed and at peace and you're kind to everything. And of course your spiritual life will grow enormously. So if you trust, if I'm making peace, being kind, being gentle in this moment, I'm doing the very best for my future, you will have a wonderful future. What you're really doing is trusting in the law of karma. Karma is what we make in this present moment. And the best karma you can make in this present moment is to make peace and be kind and be gentle. That's called, I never mentioned this before in this retreat, but it's, I mentioned it in other retreats. That's called Sammasankappa, right intention, the second factor of the Eightfold Path. I don't make these things up myself, I'm just translating from Buddhism. Nekamasankappa, Vayapada Sankappa, Hingsaka Sankappa. The three right intentions. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. The third one is usually letting go, be kind, be gentle. The first one. But I just change it to making peace. Same thing. And if you do that, you're making good karma. And when you make good karma, you trust in that karma, you're going to have good results. But if you make war, if you make anger, if you make aggression, what are you going to get? What Mr. Bush used to call collateral damage. You just make all sorts of destruction in life and for yourself and others. So always remember, make peace, be kind, be gentle in your life. And you can do that in so many different situations. You're driving to work, make peace. Somebody cuts in front of you and gives you the one finger. Make peace with them. Be kind, be gentle, don't get angry back. I love that story of, I'll stop all my stories. Which somebody said about road rage in New York. These two drivers, one did something wrong, cut inside of the other one, and the second driver, who was the victim, was chasing the first driver, chasing him all over New York, and finally caught him at a red traffic light. And the victim jumped out of his car at the red traffic light and started banging on the window of the guy he wanted to hurt. And the guy inside was terrified, you know, this enraged, you know, New Yorker who thought this driver had cut in front of him. Banging, let me in. And if he'd have got in, he would have beaten him. As luck would have it, the lights changed back to green. And so the man sped off. And so the guy who's banging on the windscreen turned around to get into his car to carry on chasing him. But when he turned around, he found his car sped off too. He left his door open, engine running. You can't do that in New York. Some kid had got in that car, stolen it and driven off. So this guy who was angry, he got his karmic reward. He was standing there at the traffic junction in the middle of the traffic with no car. Feeling a big fool. That's what happens. So instead of making anger and thinking you can get somewhere, you always lose when you get angry. You always lose when you get judgmental. So give people the benefit of the doubt. Make peace, be kind, be gentle, trust. And whatever that person does, there must be some reason why they did that. So just give them the benefit of the doubt and don't get angry at them. Someone in the office calls you a stupid fool. Don't take it personally. There must be some reason why they did that. Perhaps they're in a bad mood today. Perhaps, you know, as I said, they may be brain damaged. So just let it go. And then you can trust. The law of karma, making peace, being kind, being gentle, is the best thing you can do at all times. And even when you're trying to get to sleep at night and you can't go to sleep, what should you do? Just make peace with being awake. Be kind to it. Be gentle. At least you can relax. And every time that's happened to me, because I've been working too hard and got wound up, I just make peace. Be kind. Be gentle. And soon you fall fast asleep. The next thing you know, you're woken up in the morning. You don't try to go to sleep. You just make peace, be kind, be gentle with not being asleep. And because you're relaxing, everything turns out. So this is a bit of kindness and compassion to yourself and to the world. And I wanted to finish up with that, because it takes the meditation we've been doing here and applies it to your daily life almost seamlessly. It is being kind to everybody. It's just being gentle, respecting and trusting. And you can't do better than that in your life. So, I'm now going to be kind to you, because it's almost 9 o'clock now. We did start late. We're going to do a little metta meditation. But I cannot be a hypocrite. I have to do what I say. So, out of kindness for your bodies, you can now stand up, stretch your legs,